Action of Brooklyn, New York.
He's a three-time world heavyweight champion who ruled by intimidation.
Beat me if you can. Survive if I let you.
Taz would pick up guys nearly twice his size and drop them on their heads.
He is a human suplex machine.
Now he's bringing his no-nonsense New York swagger to the podcast world. This is Taz.
The mood is about to change.
The Human Podcast Machine.
You're not afraid of a little competition, are you?
All right. What's up, guys? How you doing? This is Taz, and I want to thank you for downloading this edition of HPM, the Human Podcast Machine, or subscribing. I appreciate it. Appreciate the growth of the show here. As many people say, and I will be one of those many, without you all, this show would not be happening. So I want to thank you guys for the support, the massive amount of downloads we're getting, and the buzz that the HPM podcast, mine, has been getting. Also, you guys probably can hear my voice. I'm a little bit under the weather. I've been doing a lot of different voice work, you know, for Play It here and CBS Radio. Also, in my regular role as a color commentator for TNA Wrestling. So, the weather changed. A lot of weather in New York and snow and rain and all this, the cold. Then it got warm. So, my body did not react well. So bear with my voice. My ears are clogged. I'm goggling salt water, which is always fun, and living on Advil. And that's my deal right now. And tea. Tea with lemon with some of this herbal organic Schnabitzfernum honey. I don't really know what it is. My wife got it, and it's pretty funky, and it's some kind of crazy honey. It's like in some weird bottle with like just says some label on it says honey, and there's nothing else on it. No nutritional chart, no government. No, she's trying to kill me. She's basically trying to kill me. That's what's going on. She's just trying to kill me. But anyway, I digress. So in this episode here of HPM, Ring of Honor, Woman of Honor, Ring of Honor's own Veda Scott. Always been a fan of Veda. One of the more, I guess, potentially filled young female wrestlers in the world today. Very entertaining, very athletic, highly technically sound in the ring, can get her stuff done. She's tough, too. Tough as hell. She's also an attorney. She has a law degree, which in itself is very unique. So we're going to get into that convo with Veda about her career. And the topic will be intergender wrestling, which I have some opinions about. Quite frankly, I'm not a huge fan of it at all. I do not enjoy calling intergender matches. And just recently on TNA, there was an intergender match with Robbie E versus Brooke. And I'm going to be honest. I hate it. I'm not a fan. So I don't know what it is. I enjoy, you know, when the dudes wrestle, I enjoy when chicks wrestle each other. But when you mix the two, I just think in this day and age, it's probably not a good move from a marketing and promotion perspective, how to get advertisers and whatnot. Just my opinion. Maybe I'm old school. I don't know. It's just everything was going on with the NFL and the whole Ray Rice situation that happened a while ago and all these TV promo campaigns that millions of dollars went behind with athletes and actors, you know, talking about abuse of women and stuff, and I'm just not a fan. My opinion. These are my opinions that I always put out here on HPM. Nobody else's. So, anyway, we're gonna get into that conversation with Veda Scott, and that'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to talking to her. You guys will, I think, will dig it. I mean, she's a very smart young lady, very talented. So I'm a fan of her. Also, before we get into that, Monday Night Raw this past Monday. Couple of things I wanted to talk about. There was a lot of scuttlebutt about, excuse me, about the Sting video package they did that was targeted towards Triple H. As usual, WWE does great production-wise videos, and everything was awesome. When it looked cool, B-roll in there, and the whole nine was very, very cool. But the voiceover, you know, many of you guys noticed, and me, that it wasn't Sting. So I was like, my Twitter blew up a little bit. Like, why would they do this? Why would they not just use Sting? Why did they not use his voice? Look, frankly, I don't have the actual answer. I could give you an opinion. I could give you an opinion of someone that's worked behind the scenes and all this stuff and been in the business a long time. That I could give you, and I will, and I'll give that to you right now. So basically, the way I see it, the way it went down was, knowing the way sometimes WWE likes to do things, they might be trying to brand Sting in this the way he sounds different than the way we all are used to him sounding. You might not ever see Sting cut a promo in the ring. You might not ever see him cut a promo backstage. Every time you hear Sting talk might be just the way we saw it on Monday night. That's my theory. Might be crazy. I might be wrong. And it might be that whoever that VO guy, the voiceover guy was, he might be the voice of Sting. And it could be a thing where that's in Vince McMahon's mind. That's what Sting should sound like, that voice that we heard. Or it could be a thing where Vince McMahon and WWE wants to brand Sting the way they want to brand him. And they're paying him, and that's their prerogative as long as Sting agrees with it. Am I a fan of that thought process? If I am correct, no, I'm not. Again, this is hypothetical. It's just my opinion. It could be a theory that's way off. I don't know. I could be wrong. I'm just telling you, like I said at the top of this topic, I don't know the reason why they did this. I'm just giving you why I think. And I only could tell you that because, excuse me, I remember from experience now, when I came into the WWE and debuted, for those people that really followed my career in the WWE, if you remember, man, I really didn't speak on a microphone for a long time. I never said a word. I mean, I wasn't allowed. that they wouldn't really let me talk and do stuff backstage. And I was known for cutting some pretty heavy-duty, hardcore promos during my ECW days, And I was shocked. They would not really let me talk. I don't remember the timeline, how long it was. I do remember that we were in Baltimore at a Raw, and I remember I grabbed Shane McMahon and said, listen, man, I was there probably a couple of months now, whatever, maybe 4 months, something like that, roughly. I'm bad with the timeline, but I was like, Shane, what's the story? Why can't I talk? Why won't these guys let me have the microphone and cut a promo? He didn't know the answers. I don't know. I have no idea. So maybe ask Vince. I go, yeah. So I asked Vince, because, no, we'll get there. We'll get there. And it was fine. I mean, when Vince says we'll get there, that means you can't push it. And I was smart enough not to disrespect him. I'm not going to push the guy. And then, but I kept being the squeaky wheel. I kept would say something to the creative team, the writers, and the agents. I was like, I want to be able to talk. And this went on for a while. And I don't think they wanted to maybe hear my voice. They wanted to brand me as this different version of Taz that I had in mind and that ECW had in mind, and kind of take my voice away, so they could rebrand me as a wrestler. Now, when this is happening to you, they don't tell you. I shouldn't say they don't tell you. From what my experience is, they didn't tell me. Maybe they've told other guys. They didn't tell me. They kind of just repackaged me and changed, and made me into this fight from underneath guy. Where I had to fight like the Big Boss Man and Albert and stuff, and 2-on-1 situations where these guys are giants next to me, and I had to keep fighting back and selling and get my ass whooped to keep fighting back. That's the way Vince wanted me to come up in WWE. Fine, no big deal. I don't care. I'll do whatever you want in the ring. But to fast forward, so a long time went by where I wasn't allowed to talk, and I was getting really pissed off. And then we were at, a Raw. I don't remember the town this time. Get ready for my. I was doing the first match on Raw. I don't remember who I was wrestling. It was an opening match on Raw, and so I was getting ready while Sunday Night Heat was on. Whatever we were taping, Sunday Night Heat or Velocity. There were so many different times they kept changing it. I can't recall which one it was in this particular night. And Vince was walking by McMahon to go to the entrance area, the gorilla position. He stopped, turns back, looks at me. He goes, you're opening up Raw, right? I go, yeah. I can't remember how I was wrestling. So he goes, come with me. I said, okay. So I follow him. We go right to the gorilla position. He hands me a microphone. He gets on headset with the truck with Kevin Dunn. And he goes, make microphone whatever, number 3, hot. Taz's going to come out after this match, cut a promo. So he stops talking to Kevin, looks at me. He goes, you got whatever he said, 2 minutes. Impress me. Now, keep in mind, I'm a veteran at this point. I'm a former world champion. I'm in WWE for a few months now. I said, anything you particularly want to hear about? He goes, the town, Milwaukee. Whatever, let's say it was Milwaukee. It wasn't Milwaukee. Let's say it was. No problem. So I go out, cut my promo. place pops, do my catchphrase at the end, the whole nine. Excuse me. Come back through the curtain. This was dark, by the way. This was not during Raw. This was like right after one of the Sunday Night Heat matches. I come back. Vince goes, pretty good. He goes, we'll get you on the mic next week. I go, sounds good, Vince. And that was it. And then that was the beginning of it. And then next you know, I segued into being a color commentator for them. You know, so that's kind of the way that happened. I guess it was a Taz tale, kind of, what I just told you. But the reason why I brought that up is because that's what reminded me when I watched Sting, because it's maybe they're taking the mic, the voice out of this guy to put a different voiceover guy over him. That could be it. Who knows? Well, time will tell. That's just my theory. And the other thing I want to talk about from Raw is Paul Heyman, talking about voices and promo cutting. Look, man. Paul's work has been amazing. His promos have been unbelievable. I mean, it's must-see TV. The guy, everybody who knows the business knows he's always been great at cut promos. And recently, on one of my fantasy draft editions, top managers, me, my producer Seth, along with Mike Tenay, were arguing about, Seth and Tenay were saying that Paul Heyman's doing some of his best work, probably doing his best work right now. And I disagreed. I said, we can't say that because he's getting more mic time now than he did when he was running the Dangerous Alliance and he was Paulie Dangerously. And that's the key. He's getting a ton of time to go out there and cut the promo. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Again, it's the cold. I'm sorry, I'm up chucking here. But that's the key. He's getting time to cut the promo, and he's just getting bullet points. He's ad-libbing, and that's what Paul does best. That's what guys like me do best. That's what a lot of us do best. There's no script. That dude's not working off a script, I promise you. And they're amazing. The promos are amazing. So, yeah, maybe he is doing some of his best work right now. I don't know. Maybe I should retract my statement from the Fantasy Draft Edition Top Manager Show. I don't know. But it don't matter. Look, it's must-see TV. Heyman's cutting these great promos. It's great stuff. I really think he's helping. He's definitely helping the show in general. He's helping Roman Reigns as the babyface. He's definitely helping Brock as the guy he manages. So Paul's doing great. Congrats to him. His promos were awesome. Congrats to WWE for letting him do his thing. I think it's great. All right, so enough of that chatter. We're going to take a quick break. Come right back with the lovely Veda Scott of Ring of Honor. She's coming at you.
All right, all right, all right. This is break time. This is break time.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Okay, welcome back right here to the Human Podcast Machine. I am Taz, and my very special guest is on the hook right now, Veda Scott. Veda, what's up?
On the hook. That's intimidating.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm doing very well.
Cool. Well, look, I appreciate you coming on. I will talk a little bit about your career, and then I wanted this topic to me of intergender wrestling. I mean, I felt like you are the perfect person to discuss this because you've done a lot of it and wrestling men, and yep. And you're also a wrestling personality, a TV personality. You've done some interview stuff. You're a tremendous in-ring competitor, all this jazz. So, but I want to get into this topic in a couple of seconds, a couple of minutes here. So, but let's talk a little bit about you because you're very unique. I mean, you're an attorney, but you're also a wrestler. Come on, you've heard this a lot. Bring me through this path. Help me.
Okay. Well, I've been a professional wrestling fan my entire life, like completely obsessed.
You're from Philly, right? I heard you're from, you grew up in Philly, right?
Philly area, yeah.
So you might have seen a few of my matches, if I could speak.
I have. I've been to ECW shows, big fan. Huge wrestling fan my entire life. My younger brother and I, like, we were obsessed all the time.
Cool.
And I kind of thought, like, this is something I really want to do. But I, first of all, wasn't really sure how to go about it, and also, like, kind of had in the back of my mind that, like, okay, maybe I should pursue something else and just be a fan. But I loved it. So time goes on. And I don't feel like completely fulfilled. Like, I'm still a huge wrestling fan, but I really want to do it. But I'd gone to college, and then I started law school. And I started law school in Philadelphia. And as time goes on, you know, I'm still going to shows. You know, I have friends who are wrestling, and there was something just missing. And as much as I loved being in law school and I knew I wanted to pursue that, there was just something not quite right.
So you felt like there was a void in your life at that time.
Absolutely. And I mean, like I said, I was in Philadelphia. I'd gone to college in New York. So this is Philadelphia, New York. This is just like the heart and soul of wrestling.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be part of it. So I made up my mind. I said, you know what? I'm not going to quit law school. I have to finish law school. I have to get my degree. But I think I kind of want to train. I really want to. So I said, if I'm going to commit to this, I'm going to commit full on with both of them. And I found a wrestling school in my area and with Ring of Honor, and I started to train under Delirious. And so I started the summer between my first and second year of law school. And so my second year of law school, while I was also studying full-time, I started to travel around the country with them and their ring crew, just trying to network and train and learn. And then by my third year, which was my last year, I started wrestling on my own. So my last year of law school, I was in school while also wrestling.
That's crazy. That had to be so – you had to have no free time.
No free time. But it was good. It was good for me to, like, start to really throw myself into the traveling. I did a ton of traveling with Ring Crew and just, you know, hopping in trucks and going around. And it got me used to this idea of when I started to wrestle, and this is when I wasn't really sure, like, where I wasn't with Ring of Honor as a performer at the time, and I wasn't really sure where I was going to break in, so I just said, I'll just go anywhere. Like, I'll just go anywhere. I just want to wrestle.
Right.
So that had kind of gotten me used to, like, got my road wind up, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. So I just started to take whatever I could and go wherever I could. And through that, I know we'll transition to this later, I discovered that some places were willing to book me to wrestle men. And
yeah,
there was ways that we could do that. And that sort of expanded my universe so much.
Cool. Well, well said. So now I want to back up just a teeny bit. So you said with Ring of Honor, you trained under Delirious. So I was always a fan of this guy's work anyway. And I know they do the right thing in their dojo, where they, for those out there that don't understand, when you say, you know, you're on Ring Crew, I mean, that's old school. We did that back in the day with the House of Hardcore and ECW, where I ran the dojo and wrestlers would be on the Ring Crew learning, because I felt like you had to learn how to build a ring, pay your dues on that Ring Crew while you're trying to be a wrestler. You're building the foundation of your home. The
right.
ring is your home, and that's the foundation. And someone like you, you came up the old school way.
I did, and I'm very proud of the way that Delirious trains people. The Ring of Honor Dojo continues to operate. We continue to train wrestlers. You know, we all go there and train just to get better and better, but new wrestlers too. And like you said, it's a dojo system. It's a very regimented wrestling education, and you can appreciate that too, that there's just it's a very regimented way of doing things, and it just teaches you every single angle that you need to know. And part of that is things like doing Ring Crew and just, you know, paying dues.
Absolutely. That's it. You took the words out of my mouth. Paying dues is what it's about. So, and you're doing that. It's nice to hear a young wrestler, male or female, is doing that stuff. I know there's a lot of people out there doing that, a lot of wrestlers. I know the independent scene is tough. I know you work for Ring of Honor, but I'm sure you do some indies still. I follow you on Twitter, and I see that. And I know the indie scene can be tough. I mean, I'm sure you're one of the more popular performers on the independent scene, but I've heard some horror stories about how difficult it is for wrestlers on the indie scene. Maybe you want to talk about that a little.
I mean, yeah, what it comes down to is being able to just sort of stand up for yourself and take care of yourself and being organized. Like, I tell people all the time that this is no different in a lot of ways than, like, if you were going to have a band and you're trying to book your own gigs for a band. Like, you're your product, and you have to stand behind what you say. And you have to be able to go out there, obviously, and network. And that's uncomfortable for some people to really just put yourself out there and say, like, hey, I'm looking for work.
Right. Right.
But once you can get past that and you start the networking process, I mean, it's really just, in the end, like, we're salesmen. We're a product, and
yeah,
the product is yourself.
It's about branding. So, you got to brand yourself.
Right.
And that's what you're talking about. You're doing a great job of that. I mean,
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you can't wait for it to come to you. You really have to reach out there, especially early on, and just, you know, like, maybe you won't be completely happy with everything that happens, but part of that's just learning. And again, like, I tell people all the time, like, you're a product. I'm my own product. And it's just a matter of branding yourself and getting yourself out there.
When I was wrestling many moons ago, I had the same mindset, exactly what you said, and I still do. And with this podcasting stuff and how I brand myself, it's so important, because you are a self-promoter, to your point. And, you know, so what happens is, right, I think you and I met, I think, one time. It was at a TNA show.
Yes.
Right, and I was like, and I saw you, like, they did some, like, I don't remember the details, who you wrestled early, like, it was a dark match or whatever, like, in front of the talent, and I'm like, I thought you were so unique. The gimmick you do, you know, the way you dressed and with the glasses and the red hair, the whole gimmick. I'm like, wow. I've been around a long time, and I've seen a lot of men, a lot of women. I'm like, this caught my eye. I'm like, this is a unique character, a unique gimmick. I marked out for it. I thought it was cool. Then I started doing the podcast. Then I see this documentary by Kenny Johnson, a short documentary about intergender wrestling. You were profiled in this thing, and I'm watching this video. I'm sorry, this thing on YouTube, this documentary. Anybody out there, I urge you, just either go on YouTube and just, you know, search Kenny Johnson. Don't know the guy.
Sure.
I'm putting him over. And he also did a mini documentary on you too, I believe, right, Vader?
Right. He took he took some of the footage that he had shot for this larger documentary, and he ended up doing a small one on me, which was a surprise. But he's so passionate about it. He's done such great things to profile us and put us out there, and there's never anything disrespectful about it. He's completely respectful for professional wrestling,
totally.
Completely respectful for this art form that we're doing, because we are artists.
Yes.
And he respects us as artists and athletes. So when this comes out, I will link his documentary on my Twitter. Everyone can check it out. Just a phenomenal job that he's been doing. And
great
he really
stuff.
Just pours so much into it.
Great stuff. And I want to talk about the content of it in a second.
Sure.
The production of it was very cool. The whole nine yards, the feel. I mean, I'm a mark for documentaries, but this one was real, like really good.
Right.
Because I'm from the business, I liked it even more. But he does a good job. He's definitely got a massive future, in my opinion, in TV production. But so I remember on a one-night only TNA pay-per-view gimmick, you wrestled Gail Kim.
Yes.
And Mike Tenay and I called that match. It was a great match. And I remember that when I had, actually recently, let me back up. Recently, I had Gail on here on my podcast, and we briefly talked about intergender wrestling. Gail, like me, is not a fan of it.
Right.
Okay. Now, for me, I got to maybe this is me being, I don't know if it's old school, I don't know if I have different morals or ethics. And you know, you've heard both sides of the coin,
of course,
I'm assuming, with this.
Of
and
course.
It's a little tough to watch. It really is.
Viscerally, it's off-putting. And there are times that we play into the fact that it is a little bit off-putting. And there are ways to incorporate that into a story you're trying to tell. But you're right. And, of course, I've heard both sides of it. I hear both sides of it all the time, and I appreciate both sides of the argument.
Yeah. But, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this. I don't really know who else has, maybe publicly, about intergender wrestling, or maybe in I don't think it was in a documentary, but it might have been shot beforehand. But the Ray Rice situation, okay?
Right.
Like, you know, what happened in the elevator with his wife and all this stuff and you know, domestic violence and all this, and you're a woman. I mean, you know, so it's like, I mean, yeah, you're a pro wrestler, but you're not a big woman.
Sure.
But even if you were a big woman, it doesn't matter. I mean, there are men that get abused. But I'm just saying it's a little bit of a tough time, I think, especially if there's kids in the audience, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm just not, and I'm all about performing. I'm all about, let's get real out there. But man, I've called intergender matches a while back in the WWE,
mm-hmm.
and I think they kind of cut back on that, I believe.
They have, yeah.
Because of networks and stuff, TNA also. So, you know, we do a mixed tag, as you know. So it's a guy and a girl tagging up against a guy and a girl. And the guy, it's man-on-man physicality, woman-on-woman physicality.
Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer wrestling men or you prefer wrestling women?
Well, I don't really have a straight answer for that. I prefer wrestling whatever is going to be the best match. And that's not a cop-out answer. There are lots and lots of men that I would not want to wrestle, and I don't feel like I get anything out of it, or it's just not a good match.
Right.
Same thing with women. I prefer to wrestle anyone where I think we're going to have fun, where I think we're going to tell the story we want to tell, and that it's going to be a good match. And there's times where that could be a man because of the intergender story, because we do play that up in a lot of aspects, depending on the match. Other times it does get negated, and I see this a lot too with some people where, like, maybe there's no gender story. But what I always say is that, like, of course I can appreciate both sides of it, and I consider myself proudly to be a feminist. I'm not advocating for domestic violence in any capacity. But I think when we start to get into things like, when we start to talk about if we're uncomfortable about something, obviously we have to ask questions about why we're uncomfortable. And there are ways to do it that it's just flat out wrong. Like, you're basically telling a domestic violence story. Like,
right.
It's uncomfortable. But then I also hear the argument about realism. And I think once you start to talk about realism in professional wrestling, we start to go down a really slippery slope. Like, okay, well then why don't we do, like, legitimate weight classes? Or when we especially with independent wrestling, you'll find that because some of the male athletes are occasionally on the smaller side, the size and the realism isn't as much of a disparity as it may be on another level. So it all comes down to the athletes who are involved and what you can do with each other. I know, personally, a lot of men who really enjoy wrestling women because of the size difference.
Well, let me interrupt you. I don't want to stereotype men,
sure,
male wrestlers, but I'm going to be honest. I've been a wrestler many years, trained him, been a commentator on him, done everything you can imagine. And I know how wrestlers think. As a guy, if you're the heel, it's easy.
It's easy. It's an easy story.
It's so easy. You know, and easy doesn't mean it's good. Easy, you know, I'm just saying, it's like it's easy heat.
I know what you're saying. And I think when we started to talk about kids, I've personally found, and I know that there's other women who have had the same experience, that a lot of times little girls in particular really respond to seeing a woman in an intergender match.
Strong woman.
Right, a strong woman. And they really respond to that. And I can appreciate that because I look back at the days of like Lita.
Right.
And that sort of thing. So there's always going to be that strong woman, and it is up to the woman in the match too to make sure that how she's portrayed is in a positive way. Again, like it's like this big melting pot that has to come together, I feel, to do this right and have it not just be cheap and have it not just be easy.
Do you ever think that it'll be mainstream?
Do I think it'll be mainstream? I think that there's a possibility that because people do have a level of discomfort, and we're talking about sponsors and networks and things like that, there's
going to
always be that issue. However,
right,
I think it's going to get bigger and bigger in independent wrestling. Will that translate into like TV wrestling? I don't know.
I don't think it can, Veda. I don't think it can.
You're talking about people who aren't necessarily wrestling fans. They're fans of advertising and networks, and I can personally see, even if I don't agree with it, I can see from the business side how that can be problematic.
I'm going to tell you right now, I've been in production meetings with TNA.
Right.
Where when we used to be on Spike TV, where they wanted to do a spot with one of the girls where a guy would bump the girl, and Spike had to jump through hoops, call New York while we were in Orlando, trying to get approval. It was so much of a cluster, and then we would just kill the spot and not do it.
Because what it comes down to then is a man hitting a woman.
Correct.
And that's just
correct.
In society, just not okay.
That's right.
And it's not, you're not able to get into necessarily like the nuances of, well, this is what we're trying to do, because you're working with networks and advertising and it's very go, go, go.
I agree.
But I do think that, and I'm seeing this all the time, that on an independent level, this could continue to become more and more widely accepted.
Okay. I buy that.
As long as it's done well. Like, for example, this was covered in the documentary, but my big feud for the past year was in a company called AIW with Greg Iron, and he was like my big nemesis for the year. And the things that we were able to do from a storytelling aspect, I think beyond even the wrestling, like the wrestling, we did some really great things there, but just in terms of the storytelling aspect of it, we couldn't have done that without the intergender, and we couldn't have done it if we weren't willing to go there. Like, we went far out there and tried to make it as just dramatic and visceral as possible. And that just comes from being someone who's like Greg, who's just a phenomenal performer, someone who's just respectful of this and wants to get out there and do just something different and something memorable, whether it's with a man or whether it's with a woman. So I will appreciate that always.
Yeah. No,
and
I do too.
His to go there.
I appreciate work. I mean, I appreciate a guy being able to go in there with a girl that's half his size and protect her. That's, you know, that's tough sledding right there. I mean, the way I used to work, that I could have never wrestled a woman. I wouldn't been able to. I just couldn't. You know,
it's a willingness to try new things and to adapt, and it's from adapting from a mental perspective too, of being, like I said, like willing to go there and willing to try something new and just trying to make this evolve. So it's not the same thing over and over,
right.
And it doesn't work for everyone. Like, there's some people that could never do this. It just doesn't work for them, and that's fine. And I respect that. But for the people that are willing to try it, I just want it to be the best that it can be. And just everyone just going out there and working as hard as possible.
Well, you're busting your ass. I've watched it. I've seen you work. I've called your match. I think I just called on that one match. And hopefully in the future I call more of your matches.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so. And I got to talk real quick about Ring of Honor. I mean,
sure.
I know you're doing great there. You got to be having a blast. That looks like a great company to work for. What's going
on there?
Absolutely.
It's awesome. This is just a locker room full of people who are trying again. Like I keep talking about, like, wanting to do something new and really wanting to push the envelope, and that's what we have there. It's just people who are just out there just trying to put on the best matches possible and just take it to another level. And the emphasis on athleticism in Ring of Honor, I think right now, is just at a level it's never been before. We have all this international global talent coming in. We're on pay-per-view now, legitimate pay-per-view, you know, on your cable provider. I mean, it's just getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
I just find in general, like, professional wrestling is a really exciting time to be part of this right now. So it's exciting all the time. Like, well, everyone just seems to be like, it's so competitive.
Yeah.
We're all just pushing and pushing and pushing to stand out.
Well, as a wrestling fan, just imagine all the opportunities. I've talked about that in the past here on the show. All the opportunity as a fan to watch wrestling on TV. It's like, I think it's like 6 days a week you can watch wrestling. It's cool.
And I mean, and you think about it, there are so many people who are out there right now who are making careers in professional wrestling, and they're not in the WWE. You know, they're making careers internationally and in the United States, just doing what they want to do and managing their own careers and being in charge of their own destiny. And
totally.
That, to me, is just phenomenal.
Well, it's funny you said that. I remember, I'm trying to remember, back when the whole thing happened, with CM Punk and all that stuff, when he dropped the podcast on Colt Cabana's podcast. I don't remember. I think it was Austin when he did the podcast with Vince McMahon. I think that's where it was, or maybe it was Colt Cabana and Punk. I can't recall, but one of those four guys said to the other at separate podcasts, something along the lines of, you know, in regards to WWE, it's the only place to go, only place to make a living. And I'm throwing flags saying, bullshit,
right.
Bullshit. You know, I that drove me nuts because it's not true.
It's just not anymore. Like, there are people, and it's part of that branding yourself, I think, and turning yourself into a product. But there are people, so many people out there who have been able to turn themselves into a marketable product on their own without a machine behind them.
Well, because,
and
let me interrupt you, I think because, and you might agree, I think the power of social media and utilizing social, correct?
Exactly. And you're seeing that now just with your podcast and being able to promote it,
yep.
That you can market yourself and brand yourself right on your phone.
Yep.
You know, like, you can become your own, like, your own social media maven just on your phone and handle your career. And the fact that we can take that power back is, I think, just so exciting.
Well, great. And listen, you're great. I'm a fan of yours. You know that. I've said it publicly. I'm a big fan of you. Love your style. Love your swagger. Respect your academically what you've done to achieve the level of law school and whatnot, as in conjunction with being a wrestler during that time. How to be tough. I wonder what your family thinks. I should just ask you that. What does your family think? I mean,
they're used to me being wrestling obsessed always. They had to deal with that my whole life growing up. Like, my allowance going towards pay-per-views, and like, I didn't have an allowance when I was a kid. It all went towards wrestling and getting the new, like, Coliseum videos. So they're used to it. I would say they're guarded but patient. They're proud of me, but they don't really get it. But as long as I'm, you know, as long as I'm safe,
they want you to be happy.
I have to, my one thing is, I do have to call my mother and tell her every single week, like, where I'm going to be that weekend. She just wants to know where I am, keep track of
me. That's a good parent. I mean, that's what you want, you know, especially as a woman traveling. And I the only thing I didn't ask you, I wanted to ask you real quick, is about, like, I don't know if you have a significant other, a boyfriend, or whatever. I don't think you're married. But with this intergender wrestling, does that get in the middle of a relationship?
I've been fortunate in my history to have people who can just appreciate, whether they're in the business themselves or not, that can trust me to make the right decisions. And I think that's just what you need in order to have a supportive partner. Right. So rather than it being a jealousy issue, it's more of a, like, I trust you to make the right decisions. Like, we can talk about it, but I trust you that this is your career, and this is your art. This is what you do.
Yep. Got it.
So, well, I've been really lucky.
No, that's cool. And I believe you make your luck. You've been lucky, I guess, finding the right person to hang and chill, which is cool. You've been fortunate to position yourself the right way as a wrestler. I think your upside is tremendous as a performer.
Thank you.
I really do. I'm a fan of you. Otherwise, I would, you know, I, I thought you were perfect for this topic, and hopefully fans out there that aren't aware of you now learn who Vader Scott is and what you're doing out there. And going forward, I want to have some more Ring of Honor wrestlers on here because I'm a fan of the company, and I think they do a great job. So, look, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
All right, cool. And keep doing your thing, okay?
Thank you.
Hey, you can follow Vader. Vader, you got a very cool Twitter account. It plays off Big Van Vader. So you say it.
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at It's Vader Time, V-E-D-A.
It's awesome.
Yeah, so that's right. I try to put everything out on my Twitter, everywhere I'm going to be, and just like we just said, just try to market off social media.
That's it. It's Vader time. All right, Vader, look, you're doing great. Keep rolling. Thanks again. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye. All right, look, I got to go take a break right now. Hold up. Wait. You're not. Are you crying? Are you actually crying? There's no crying in podcasting. Get yourself a tissue. I'll be right back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it. Boys and girls, pull up your stools. It is now time for Taz Tales.
All right, I want to go back a long time ago. You know, when I first started, basically, my first match, I think, would be a good little tale to tell right here. My first ever professional wrestling match. And it happened to be in Puerto Rico because I was, as many know, I was trained by the unpredictable Johnny Rods in Brooklyn, New York. And Johnny, at that time, you know, in the late 80s, had a lot of, and early 90s, had a lot of ties and connections in Puerto Rico. And as many of you know, wrestling was Puerto Rico was a hotbed for pro wrestling back in the day. So Johnny had ties to a lot of, you know, medium-sized promoters, for lack of better terms, or small promoters too, in Puerto Rico. And so many of his students that he was training, they would kind of break in and get their start in Puerto Rico. And I was one of them. And what happened was, I probably completed around 9 months of training, which was extremely difficult physically, mentally, and emotionally, more than you would imagine, just to break into this crazy business and to learn how to wrestle the proper way. But Johnny Rods, the way he trained us, was he kind of didn't give us the old inside terms and all this inside chatter, the way it was, all these words and lingo, because he was very old school. And there was no internet, there was none of this stuff back then, there was no Google searching. So we went to Puerto Rico. When I say we, I'm talking about, like, a guy I broke in with was a guy named Alexander the Great, who is no longer with us, unfortunately, which many of you might know as Big Dick Dudley, who was one of the original Dudleys in ECW. And Alex, his real name is Alex Rizzo. Alex was a very dear friend of mine and a dear friend of Bubba Ray Dudley, you know, Bully Ray also. So, but at that time, we broke in together. So we were on a plane together, and we head to Puerto Rico, and we were both green as grass. And, you know, we were going to go there and be heels. Bad guys. We learned we were going to be bad guys. And we get off this plane, and, you know, there's a minivan waiting for us and picks up a few of the American wrestlers, and Alex and I being two of them. And we get in this minivan, and it's humid out, it's raining, it's disgusting out, just not a beautiful day in lovely San Juan. And we go directly to this stadium, this arena. It's like an old baseball stadium. And it must have rained all day, all night, whatever. And we get off this plane, and again, I never had a match in my life. And we're driving to this stadium, and it's a dump. We walk into this stadium, walk in a locker room, there's puddles everywhere, there's no windows, it's humid, it smells, it's just rancid. I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating, it was not nice, but I loved it. I loved the fact I was going to have my first pro wrestling match. I was so geeked up, so amped up, so was Alex. We were really fired up, and we walk in, they had all these little locker rooms, like all these little rooms. So we had to find our little spot, but we were the junior guys. We were the green guys. We were the new guys. So no one's holding you a spot in the locker room. You got to pay your dues, you know? So we kind of came up like that. And every time we walk in these locker rooms, you know, these veteran guys, American guys and Puerto Rican guys, they would always say, like, these words. Like, they would talk
like Connie, which we learned was Connie later, which is kind of like a pig Latin type of where you take the English language and swerve the words around so it's tough to understand what they were. And that was kind of like a language that wrestlers spoke a lot back then. So fans couldn't know what they were saying. Connie, short for carnival, because it started in the carnival business. So they were saying these words as we were walking by them, and we didn't know what they were because we never learned Connie. Johnny Rods never taught us that. He also never taught us what the word, kayfabe means. And we'd hear that a lot. We'd walk in the locker room, kayfabe, and we didn't know what it meant. And every time that just basically meant they didn't want to talk around the two young guys, the two new guys. But we didn't know what that meant. We had to learn it the hard way. Looking back on it, it was a struggle. But Johnny Rods, brought us up the right way to earn our stripes and literally learn on the job. So what happens is we're going to shoot 3 weeks of TV in one night. So that means I'm going to have three matches. That means several of the guys are going to have three matches. So end up that I had my first match against, I don't remember the guy's name. He was a smaller guy with a mask, and he wasn't like a super medic, because that was a famous tag team there, the super medicos or super medics. He was like the paramedic, like a super para, not so super medic. I don't know who he was. He wasn't very good. And they wanted me to just guzzle him up, as they call it in the biz, eat him up. And I was new, and I was aggressive, and I was strong, and I was tough, and I had an attitude, and it was easy to go in there and dominate someone, and I did that, and I was nervous, but it worked, and people hated me. Alexander the Great, Big Dick Dudley, Alex Rizzo, he went and had the same marching orders. He went and destroyed his guy. Then we went and destroyed two other guys as a tag team, actually, mind you. So then I had my first tag team match. And now, this is where it gets even funnier. So now they've built us in these couple of hours here in this little stadium while they're shooting the TV show that, we're two bad guys and we're part of this faction with this heel manager. His name was Barabbas, and he was a famous manager in over there in Puerto Rico, a heel manager, bad guy manager. And he kind of was our mouthpiece because I didn't talk. And Big Dick Dudley, Alex Rizzo, he didn't talk. So this guy was going to talk for us because we're going to be in Puerto Rico for 2 weeks. We're going for one show. So now this is where it gets funny. So we are told in the third hour, a good guy is going to get jumped in the ring. A babyface is going to get jumped by several of the heels. And I was one of the heels. So was Alex Rizzo. And we're going to hit the ring. And we are going to, beat up on this babyface until the other babyface and the other good guys come out of the locker room to make the save, as they call it. And then we are going to leave the ring. Now, I didn't know, nor did Alex Rizzo, that leave the ring meant take a powder. That's like an inside term that you can probably Google now and learn. So I didn't know that. So here's where it gets interesting. So we hit the ring. We stop beating up on this good guy, medical number 62 or whatever number he was. And here comes all the good guys. And one of the good guys was a guy named the Cheetah Kid. His real name was Ted Petty. And some of you might know him as one half of the Public Enemy from ECW fame, and he went to WWF, and he was the Flyboy Rocco Rock, and that's who Ted Petty was. Then he was called the Cheetah Kid. He wore a mask, had like cheetah print, always in great shape, a great veteran, a great wrestler, tough dude, had a boxing background, a great wrestling background, a legitimate tough guy. And he used to come to Johnny Rods' school when I was coming up in Brooklyn, and he would help Johnny train us. So I always respected Ted Petty, Teddy as we called him. And so one of the good guys that hits the ring is Teddy. And he starts nailing, I guess Johnny Rods probably said, go to the two green guys, go to, Alex Rizzo and Taz. And actually then I was called Kid Crush. That was my name, Kid Crush. And boom, he comes to the ring and he starts nailing me and he nails Alex. We're nailing back. He says, take a powder. And we're nailing him, he's nailing us. He goes, take a powder. And every time he says, take a powder, he's hitting us harder and harder and harder. And I'm like, what the hell does this powder thing mean? But it's starting to really hurt. And I'm hitting him harder. He's hitting me harder. And then he just went nuts on us, and all the baby faces started beating the crap out of us. And he literally threw us out of the ring, which was not fun. And then we get in the locker room and get screamed at. Take a powder, we learned the hard way, meant leave the ring when the good guys come in. So, yeah, we learned that the hard way. And I just wanted to share that here, and you know what happened, the insight of that. I mean, it's something that I think is a lost art in our business, unfortunately, that I think because of the evolution and the power of the internet and wrestling fans and young wrestlers being much smarter to things, I kind of came up old school, so I'm giving you like an old school thing that happened. You know, I just could imagine now if you tell someone backstage who's never had a first match, take a powder, well, they'll know exactly what that means. Back then, we didn't. You know, we learned it the hard way, and I think that's important. And I think it's a lost art. I know I'm going to sound a little old, and my thinking might be a little archaic here, but I don't really care. I think that some of that's lost. I think that young wrestlers know too much today. They before they get their first pair of boots or their first pair of trunks, they know every single little inside term and language and all these inside terms, which, you know, back years ago, you had to earn that. You know, and that's kind of the moral of what I'm saying to you right here. You had to earn that. And look, will it ever go back to that? No way. Of course not. No, it will not go back to that. Quite frankly, most of the guys that my generation of performers that I see, they don't even talk like that no more. Those words don't even come up anymore because it's a lost art. And the business has changed. That was our thing back then and the generation before us and the generation before that generation. So, you know, things change sometimes for the better. In this topic, I don't think so. I, in my opinion, my stance is, I wish it was still like that. I know it never will be. But I do think that that's something where it's an earn your stripes, pay your dues type thing. So that was basically the story of my first match there. And my time there for 2 weeks was rough. I mean, because we didn't stay in a hotel. You know, they kept us in a house that they rented out in the rainforest, which is a beautiful area outside of San Juan there. And it was gorgeous. And this house was empty in this beautiful area, and there's tons of property and all this great landscaping, but there were no windows in the house. We had no television. We had no phone. It looked like a brand new house that was just empty with no furniture. I'm not lying. It was just like a couple of mattresses, and we had a refrigerator that worked, and they would bring us food, and we'd stock our fridge, or we'd go shopping with a minivan. We didn't drive. They drove us around. And it was tough because you couldn't call home. There was no cell phones. It was, and you were there for 2 weeks. So, you know, it wasn't exactly, and there was no air conditioning, by the way. We had fans in the room. So, and as you can imagine, in Puerto Rico, it gets pretty hot. Seth, I'm sure you've been to Puerto Rico. You've probably stayed in some fancy hotel, though, knowing you.
That's how I roll.
Yeah, fancy Seth. That's you. Yeah, I didn't have a fancy hotel, my friend.
Hey, how many tours did you make in Puerto Rico?
Oh, that was called one, uno, as they say. Yeah, I only went once. I was supposed to go back two more times. I kind of, I pulled a hammy. I didn't want to go. Yeah, I didn't want to go. No, because I'll tell you, and I appreciate you asking that question, because here's the thing. I had my first string of matches for 2 weeks in Puerto Rico, had my fill of it, and I realized, you know, that I was getting on TV there, small-time TV. It wasn't for Carlos Colon's promotion. It was for a smaller promotion. So, I did not want to. I wanted to hone my craft and build my name rapidly in the Northeast of our country, of the United States. That's why I didn't. Maybe it was a bad move. I probably should have went on those tours to get better, but I wanted to rapidly get on the shows in New England, in New York, in New Jersey, in Pennsylvania. I wanted to get booked on those shows, so I had like tape, videotape of those matches that we had in Puerto Rico, and I would send those to promoters in Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, all these local promoters to try to get booked. Hey, look, here's me. This is how I look. This is how I wrestled. Here's my 8x10. Can you book me?
Those tapes still exist anywhere? Those matches?
Ooh, I'm sure they're somewhere. I don't have them. I mean, my mom probably has. She probably sold them on eBay, knowing her. But I don't know. I don't know what they are. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think about them, nor do I want to see them. I wasn't very good, to be honest with you.
When's the last time you watched one of your matches?
Oh, my God. Long time. Probably about two or 3 years on YouTube. I watched my debut against Kurt Angle at Madison Square Garden. You know, you have any other questions for me, or can I wrap this edition up of Taz Tales?
Wrap it up.
I'm wrapping it up. So that was it. That was my first match. That was the story behind what happened. And thanks to Johnny Rods for bringing me up the hard way and learning the hard way. Sometimes too hard. But that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Ciao. All right, look, we'll take a quick break. I'll be right back. I got to smack a few people around over here on the 44th floor of CBS. So I'll be right back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Okay, okay, dokie, dokie. The match is over, ladies and gentlemen. That was a lot of fun, man. Good interview right there. Had a good time chatting it up with Veda Scott. Want to thank her and Ring of Honor for letting Veda come on the show. That was very cool. Also, hope you guys really loved the Taz Tales that I dropped down. Rocking it, my first taste of the business in PR in Puerto Rico. It was crazy. So that's that. So I'm really excited about next week's show here on HPM. Going to drop it maybe a little early. I got to see what's going on. But we're going to do this new celebrity edition on HPM with lacrosse sensation Paul Rabil, lacrosse professional Paul Rabil. I've talked about Paul before on here. Paul is a pro wrestling aficionado. He's a huge fan of our business. Give him a chance here, guys. This guy respects what we do. He follows the business as much as most of you guys do. So Paul's going to give us a different perspective. Rabil is a pro athlete. And all success he has, as I've deemed him before, he's the LeBron James of professional lacrosse. I understand lacrosse is not a household name sport. You don't see it on ESPN SportsCenter all the time or all that jazz. But for those of you that do know, it's the fastest game on 2 feet. Ain't no doubt about it. These guys are insanely sick, amazing athletes. They're underrated. I obviously have a little bit of an agenda. My son is a lacrosse player, soon to be a Division I college player in a couple of years, as he's committed already. But so I have a different respect for the game than most because I've been around it since he's little, and it's underrated. So I want Rabil to come on here and talk about pro wrestling. He's not talking about lacrosse. He'll talk about pro wrestling. And in time going forward, we're going to have different actors and athletes on here, musicians, maybe once a month, just sprinkle them in, just that are wrestling fans, to get their perspective on our industry. Again, thank you to Veda Scott in this episode. I appreciate it. And thank you to all of you guys and gals who download this episode of HPM. I do appreciate it. Thank you for the subscriptions and downloads. Keep spreading the word. Tell your friends and family what I got rocking here and what I'm doing with Play.it. Check out the other shows on Play.it. They're pretty badass. And that's really it. So look, that's a wrap, boys and girls. My name is Taz. Yours is not. See ya.